From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is off this week. So today's show will be covering the topics of sustainability, weather, and climate, and all of that related to Summit County. First up will be Lisa Yoder. She is the Sustainability Coordinator for Summit County, and she'll be giving us some details on the county's 2014 to 2016 sustainability plan. What does a sustainability plan look into? Well, for one thing, our inefficiencies in how we consume coal, oil, and natural gas. Lisa will explain what the county is doing to identify and reduce those inefficiencies, saving money in the process. Then in the second half of the show, Brian McInerney will join me to talk about weather and climate. Brian is from the National Weather Service and comes on every 3 months to give us a summary of what happened the past season, temperature and precipitation-wise, but also explain what's going on with weather and climate trends on a national and international basis. There was certainly no shortage of weather and climate extremes this past winter, showcased by the completely opposite conditions the U.S. East and West Coast experienced and continue to experience. Brian will help explain the causes and what to expect this coming spring. All that and some news about our new foreign oil. It's not Saudi Arabia or Venezuela or Nigeria, Russia or Iraq. It's Canada. In fact, we now import more oil from Canada each day than Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Nigeria, Russia and Iraq combined. We've replaced geopolitically incorrect oil with environmentally incorrect tar sands. I'll bring you the numbers later in the show. Stop idling and listen. It's This Green Earth. And it all gets started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. Join us for The Mountain Life Wednesdays at 9 a.m.
From the science of willpower to exploring the teenage brain.
From bike fit to relationship alignment.
From embracing imperfection to going gluten-free.
Join us for conversations with the experts on health, fitness, and lifestyle.
It's The Mountain Life Wednesdays at 9 a.m.
Brought to you by Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation.
Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa.
Park City Clinic.
Grand Valley Bank.
And Park Meadows Country Club.
This is Tom Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we're happy to support KPCW. Prudential Utah has been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976. Our agents know the community and the local market. More information can be found online at prud-utah.com or at one of our 14 offices throughout Park City.
Hi, this is Alyssa Daly with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. All-in-one recycling is used in Summit County. Recyclables go in your larger blue or brown bin, and gray is for garbage. Recycling helps keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. And this week is we're going to focus on sustainability. First, we have Lisa Yoder. She is the Sustainability Coordinator for Summit County, and she's on this morning to talk a little bit about what the county is doing with respect to sustainability programs and issues. Lisa, thanks for joining me on This Green Earth.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me this morning.
Well, let's start with giving our audience a little background on what a sustainability plan is. What are some of the goals and objectives of a typical plan?
Well, sustainability plans vary a great deal. What we see are sustainability plans that look at primarily efficiencies within their government or within their region, whether it's a city plan, a county plan, or some jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And they range everything from sustainable housing to sustainable fleets, efficiencies in the fleets, efficiencies in heating and electricity.
It could be waste generation or water consumption.
Right. How to maintain your water supply over the long term, making it safe and resourceful, reducing landfills so the landfill lasts longer. We don't want to be building more landfills if we don't have to, certainly.
So like I say in the opening is among other things, it's a way of looking at how, in this case, the county's operations, among other things, consume coal, oil, and natural gas in the form of energy or fuel or heating or cooling, et cetera.
That's the emphasis, the direction that I'm taking the sustainability plan in the next 2 years. We had an extensive plan, an exceptional plan over the last 3 years that looked at everything from increasing renewable energy countywide, renewable energy within the county operations itself. We looked at land management codes, open space, and we'll continue to work on those. But what I found is that we have departments that work on air quality specifically. The public health department does a fantastic job of working on water and air quality. I will assist them, but we'll let those departments take the lead on those subjects. The landfill manager does a great job of managing the landfill and reducing tonnage through recycling. So what I've done is I've taken the focus to more energy efficiency in the buildings, which has a huge reduction in emissions to help improve air quality. And primarily then the second main target is fuel reduction, which again, fuels from our fleet, from the public transit system, and from our commuters. That makes up about 60% of the emissions that operating county government produces.
Okay, so when you talk about emissions, you're talking about carbon dioxide equivalents.
Yes.
Basically at the end of the day. Okay. So let's go back to buildings and let's take a look at these things one at a time. Buildings, what did you find there as far as opportunities to reduce energy?
Well, that's the single best cost-effective measure to implement that we can all do in our homes or in businesses is be more efficient. First of all, simple things, turn off the lights, implement perhaps light sensors that detect someone in the room. If the room is vacant for 5 minutes, it shuts off the lights because us people, we sometimes forget, oftentimes forget. Right. So looking at things that take over management of electricity, the heating and ventilating systems to make them more efficient can save us a lot of money in electricity costs, natural gas costs, and then consequently those things come from carbon-based substances. So by reducing their consumption, we put less emissions in the air, helping to maintain air quality, which is what we want.
Right. In this case, kind of regionally, because electricity, at least in this state, 80% of our electricity, plus or minus, comes from burning coal. So the less electricity we use, basically the less coal we're burning.
Correct.
And natural gas, too, because there are more and more municipal power plants that are using natural gas. So there's the opportunities there. Like I like to look at it in terms of conservation, efficiency, and technology. Conservation is the act of turning things off or just simply, you know, shutting things down when you don't need them. Efficiencies are where you do need lights, you have to have them on, maybe use a more efficient type of
light.
Right.
We're switching out. We're doing lighting upgrades to two buildings that should reduce about a third of the electricity demand in two buildings through lighting upgrades and efficiencies in the HVAC controls, heating, ventilating controls, which regulates when the heating and ventilating comes on, monitors it, and escalates it more slowly rather than a sudden bulk turn on, which, you know, is an increased load all at once. So different things in the heating and ventilating system and lighting systems that make it more efficient, more cost effective.
And that's the third leg of the stool that I look at is technology, where you're employing sensors or other devices, that smart devices that monitor electricity use. Mm-hmm. So those three things add up, and again, you know, okay, we're impacting the environment by burning and affect less coal and natural gas, but it's saving the county money, and you're quantifying that too, right?
Yes, I am. That's a challenging, complicated endeavor. we have, I mean, we all have the data. It comes in the form of our bills, mm-hmm. the fuel bills, the electricity bills. And then extracting that and quantifying it and applying emissions formulas to it, we can determine how many emissions we are putting into the atmosphere. It's a lengthy process. It's very detailed mm-hmm. and time-consuming, but it's doable. So with each plan, we have an emissions reduction goal, and by quantifying all of our emissions, we can see how we're doing towards attaining that goal.
Okay. So that's buildings, efforts there to reduce energy consumption within your buildings. This is county operations, again, not countywide, just county operations. Let's turn to fuel use, mm-hmm. county operations, vehicles, et cetera. What's going on there?
Well, we've reduced the number of vehicles in our fleet 24% over the last 3 years. So we're taking a hard look at what vehicles we really need. Do we need to have four-wheel drive trucks for the majority of our operations, or will a SUV do that gets better gas mileage?
Mm-hmm.
So we're right-sizing our vehicles. We put in place a fleet review committee that each year when as vehicles are acquired, well, I should say replaced as we turn over old vehicles, the committee looks at the acquisition requests and helps the department say, now, do we really need this size vehicle? Could we possibly use a CNG vehicle in this
right.
situation? What's the most cost-effective vehicle that gives us the lowest tailpipe emissions? So we're
okay.
looking at fuel economy.
And still gets the job done.
Yes, and most importantly, gets the job
right.
done.
Okay.
So it's not like you can go through the whole fleet and say, okay, we're going to go to all electric vehicles or all natural gas vehicles, because certain vehicles aren't available for different needs. So it's a review of each situation and what's the best vehicle for that use.
Okay. So you're looking again. Conservation, efficiencies, technologies. Mm-hmm. Technologies might be a different type of vehicle, CNG vehicle. Efficiencies, better fuel mileage vehicles. And conservation, maybe not driving these vehicles so much, or there are people not allowed to take them home, or a little better oversight on how the mileage is consumed.
Well, they're typically not allowed to take them home.
Okay.
I think the sheriff's department does for reasons they
sure.
determine most beneficial. But
they're not. But again, 24% reduction in overall vehicle purchase. You said
right. We're looking at sharing them across departments.
Okay,
the one department uses them primarily spring and summer, and then they don't use them much the rest of the year. Now, who else can use those vehicles the rest of the year that they don't have to? So we don't have to buy two vehicles to sit there. Two halves of the year. Let's
okay.
make one vehicle used all year long.
Right. Okay. So again, that it can the benefits there are environmental and economic. You know, just saving fuel, and that can be equated to a cost.
Right.
You're doing that too. And so you're mm-hmm. you're seeing. So what are you seeing? Relative savings. In as you reduce things, vehicles by 24%, or usage, different usage, more efficient usage, what kind of percent decrease in fuel consumption are you seeing?
Ooh, I don't have that number right off the top of
okay.
my head. We did see a significant reduction in the gallons of fuel use, but I don't know that number right
okay.
off the top of my head.
And there are plans to incorporate more compressed natural gas vehicles?
Yes. We put one into place this last year, 2013. And I think we have 6 to 8 vehicles on order or in the process of being ordered or converted presently for the 2014 budget year.
Okay. All right. So so that's fuel. That's buildings. How about and if you just join us, let me take a break here. We're speaking with Lisa Yoder. She's the sustainability coordinator for Summit County. We're talking about the county's 2014-2016 sustainability plan. We've been talking about opportunities to reduce energy consumption in the county's operations, including their buildings and their vehicles. Let's turn towards waste generation. You talked about the landfill. Obviously, there's activities going on there to like you say, better manage the landfill as far as not only the waste that's coming in, but opportunities to recycle or otherwise repurpose a lot of the waste that, that in the past might just get thrown in the landfill cell. Correct.
Yes, we have a great landfill director that probably isn't the right title, Jaron Scott,
mm-hmm.
and he's done an amazing job of working with the landfill to reduce what's dumped in there
mm-hmm.
and separate household hazardous waste. And then, of course, Recycle Utah works closely with Jaron to help eliminate or repurpose, recycle a lot of materials. I'm trying to think of the tonnage that was reduced, eliminated from the landfill this last year. I want to say about 18% less went into the landfill, went to recycling instead. So that's a huge reduction in, in space in the landfill.
And that extends the life of the landfill.
Exactly.
So the county isn't out spending, which would probably be tens of millions of dollars, to design and construct a new or one or two new lined landfill cells.
Right.
So
and who wants them? Where do you put that?
Right. Exactly. Where are you going to put that? Land is precious here.
Right.
So that's the area, solid waste. What about some other areas you talked about, either like, say, building codes or land use management, et cetera? You want to touch
Sure. Again, we have exceptional people working in planning and the planning and building departments. So they, of course, take the lead on the land management codes. But what I do is work with them to ensure that there's sustainability components within there. We are going into phase two of redesigning or, excuse me, of upgrading the general plan, kind of the big picture of how we want to develop lands in the future. So there'll be some sustainability measures in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the development code gets into the more detailed aspects such as lighting requirements, some of the specific requirements. And I'll work closely with those departments to make sure we have some good sustainable practices.
Lighting,
in there.
Heating, insulation, cooling. Perhaps all of those things, components might be addressed in one form or another.
Of course, the building code, you know, sets the real building standards. But when we get into like lighting of, say, resorts, lighting of parking lots, some things like that, wildlife management, wildlife corridors, how do we protect those areas? That's all kind of things that I'll be working with the departments on.
Okay, let's spend the last few minutes talking about going forward. You know, what are some of the goals going forward as you continue to look for opportunities to reduce energy inefficiencies or so?
Well, first and foremost is to reduce the energy consumption and the emissions from county operations and mm-hmm. facilities. And that will continue. We have several projects in place currently underway to increase efficiencies in two buildings. We're exploring solar on the Justice Center. That's a huge energy user.
Yeah.
It's on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every single day of the year with inmates and the dispatch center. That's
right.
A crucial building in operations that uses an incredible amount of energy.
Okay, so there's opportunities there.
Huge opportunities. So within the government, that's one aspect. But then this second year at the county, I'm going to take these efforts more countywide and help look at a program, help develop a program to increase energy efficiencies in our homes and focus on fuel reductions. I think in our homes, we have the best opportunity to be more efficient, which makes our homes more comfortable and more cost-effective
right.
for us to live in. So those are some areas that I'll be looking at on a countywide level,
right.
also to help with air and water quality countywide.
Okay. And are you footprinting the counties, planning to footprint the counties' carbon consumption?
Yes, we did a phase one assessment 2 years ago. And I'll be building on that. We'll have a consultant help us with phase two. Well, we'll get more specific programming in place and more specific analysis and cost breakdowns of what types of things we can do throughout the county that will be the most cost effective and beneficial.
Okay. Is the plan available to citizens online, or can they get a copy of that in any way?
Yes, it's available online. I will make sure that it's posted under government. Let's see, government services tab, and then under that is sustainability.
Yes.
And I will make sure that the updated plan is posted there.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Lisa Yoder. She is the sustainability coordinator for Summit County. You do a great job. The county does really excellent work looking at the what you guys are doing and comparing it with what else is going on around the country. You guys are doing really great work, and I hope you lots of luck in your continuing efforts there.
Thank you very much, Chris.
We'll stay in touch.
Right.
Hey, let's take a little break for some underwriters. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Brian McInerney from the National Weather Service. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
This is Dana Edwards on behalf of Vail Resorts and Canyons Resort supporting KPCW. This year, we developed partnerships with 25 local nonprofits to support programs like the fourth grade program at Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Every fourth grader in Summit County will experience Utah's ecosystem firsthand and see science come to life through infield classes. Thanks to Swanner for making science cool.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts from Park City Medical Center, a nonprofit community hospital and part of the Intermountain Healthcare System. Park City Medical Center is proud to be consistently recognized as having some of the most engaged employees in the country. Little wonder, considering we offer all employees a pension plan, 401k, excellent insurance, and of course, year-round employment. We are currently recruiting nurses, registrars, housekeepers, kitchen staff, and more. Visit parkcitymedicalcenter.org to find your dream job.
Park City Restore is grateful for the many hands that have made it successful. Your gift of time means more affordable housing services are available locally through Habitat for Humanity. Plus, volunteering at the Restore gives you a first look at the amazing treasures donated for resale. Learn how you can get involved at habitat-utah.org. Click on the big yellow volunteer button. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, our relationship with the environment, impacts upon it, concepts of sustainability, and joining me in the studio for his, he visits every solstice and every equinox, plus or minus, it's Brian McInerney, senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service down in Salt Lake City. Brian, thanks for coming on, and we're going to talk a little bit about this, among other things, this past winter. How did we do this past winter up here? Let's start with that. First, what was it like temperature-wise? Were the temperatures average, yes, above, or below?
So if you were to take a look at the country itself, and you were to just cut it right down the middle, the eastern half of the U.S. was really cold, 7 degrees to 10 degrees colder than normal. And then when you look at the western U.S., we were incredibly hot. And even if you were in California and parts of Arizona, they were 15 degrees above normal in many places for,
wow,
prolonged periods of time. And that really stuck on through the early February. So when you think of the first half of the winter, California had snowpacks that were 5 to 10% of normal. Here in Park City, we were somewhere in the range of 40 to 50%. And the main culprit for our abysmal snowpack all in the west was a high pressure blocking weather pattern that has been with us for the past 3 years. And this weather pattern comes and goes over time typically, and it usually sets up in January. It might go for a week, it might go for a month, but this one lasted through the end of January. And when you look at it geographically, it was massive. It extended all the way up into northern Alaska and down south of Baja, almost to the equator. So when you think of any weather that's moving our way across the Pacific, the storms would hit this high pressure system, and then everything was shunted north. And it went all the way up to the top of Alaska, and then it would come down over the high pressure. Now you've got very, very cold air. And as it descends, it's coming right out of the Arctic and down into the Midwest. It would clip parts of the Upper Green and the Colorado River Basin during this time. So their snowpacks were actually not too bad all the way through the winter.
Right.
But that cold air then moved down in the south central U.S., and then it would swoop back up on the East Coast. So everything in the eastern part of the U.S. was under constant snow, constant cold, as that jet stream moved out of the polar areas down and produced snow down in Atlanta, which paralyzed those areas that are not used to this type of weather.
Okay. So as usual, Brian, I asked you one question. You answered the next five questions
I
have.
Sorry, I got going.
All right. Okay. So in any case, here, at least in this area, the temperatures were fairly standard, average Park City area, but the precipitation was low. I got a number here that says, according to NOAA, this was the 33rd warmest winter out of 119. So, you know, nothing – it's not excessively warm, but a little above average.
Yeah.
But it's the 19th driest winter. So that's like the top 15% of the driest winters.
Yeah.
And so you concur with that?
Yeah. So let's take it a step further with regard to our high pressure. Then in February hit and it broke down. And when it broke down, we had this atmospheric river that started from Hawaii.
Pineapple Express.
Yep. And moved across in a westerly flow right in between where the high pressure was located to the north of us and to the south of us. And it saved the winter. We had snowpacks that were abysmal. And they bumped up in northern Utah. There was the storm was essentially four storm cycles that moved through in very late January and through February. And in some areas produced up to 25 inches of water, not even snow, but the water in the snowpack. And when you look at that amount of water that came in a 2 to 3 week period, it was phenomenal. We bumped our snowpack here from about 50% up to 80-90% in about a 2 to 3 week period in early February.
So this is a wetter than normal snow?
Yeah. And the problem with coming out of Hawaii, it was a very warm system.
Right.
And that's what caused our very warm temperatures, where it rained below 7,500 feet.
Yeah. This is kind of anecdotal, kind of just notes I take myself, is that this was one of the first winters. I've only been here for seven winters. But this is one of the first times I saw it rain in both January and February. You know, there seemed to be more rain-based events that might turn to snow eventually, but it rained.
Yeah.
And you're saying that could be attributed to a warmer flow of air.
Yeah. It originating out, it didn't come from the Pacific Northwest up by Alaska. It started off by Hawaii.
Okay.
And then it went direct west all the way straight through California, where they picked up a lot of moisture. They're still really far behind. But then into Utah, and it was mostly northern Utah. Southern Utah, for the most part, has not benefited from these weather patterns at all. Their water supply forecast, the volume of water they anticipate coming out of the mountains is 25% or less this year. They're in bad shape still.
But weren't they in good shape in the fall?
In November,
last time
October,
you were here, they were,
October and November.
They were doing better than we were.
Yeah, and then once December hit, then they stopped.
Shut off.
And they haven't seen any major storm activity since then.
Okay. So then summarize again, where are we with our snowpack?
So our snowpack here in Park City, as of today, we're at 90% of median, which is good. You know, the skiing's been okay. The problem with when you look at snow tells for your information on snow this year is that the snow tells are automated snow measuring stations located on north facing slopes in treed areas. So the question is, if we had our major storm event was very warm and it rained below 7,500, are we overestimating the entire snowpack and runoff picture if we just use snow tells. And the hydrologists at the Colorado Basin River Forecast Center that make these forecasts put that into the model and found that was the case, that we have snow up high that's quite good, but the snow at the 6,500 to 8,000 range is quite poor and almost non-existent in many areas across the north, central Utah. And then when you get down in southern Utah, they have so little snow that they're in bad shape all around. But that warm temperature, and we're going to see more of this as time continues because we're changing the fraction of precipitation increasingly as rain
right.
as time goes on. This is just like a little snapshot of what may be in our future as rain down to, you know, up to 7,500 feet and snow above that with intermixed events depending what happens.
A precursor to the new normal that might be setting up here.
Right.
But is it possible that the snow that is up high has a greater water density to it, because you say that it was a wetter type of snow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has higher density to it. And it also is more ripe for this time of year. So typically your snowpack, when it reaches 50% density, meaning if you have 10 inches of snow, you melt it, you get 5 inches of water. At about 50%, you start yielding meltwater out of that snowpack, and then you get runoff. But what we see this year is it's up around 40-some percent as we speak, which is a little early. And you don't want this to melt off early. You want it to stay in the mountains as long as possible. Then you get a more efficient runoff. So it's more ripe. It's more dense. And when it does come off, we estimate in this area we're around 75% runoff volumes coming out from April 1st through the end of July. And so as a result, we probably won't fill all of our reservoirs. Jordan L probably won't fill. Deer Creek may, and some of the smaller reservoirs, but we'll have to see how this spring plays out.
Well, right. And let's talk a little more about the water levels in a second. But obviously, winter basically is not over yet. We still have storms that can come through, whether it's snow or rain, preferably snow.
Yeah.
We've got a storm coming
tomorrow.
Tomorrow that looks like it's going to be mostly snow for this area.
Yeah. No, it's a good storm. We've got two good storms moving in. Good active pattern. Tomorrow we'll have maybe, you know, up to a foot at the higher elevations from this storm, so it should be good skiing.
Okay.
So if you can take the day off, that'd be great. And then another one coming looks like Tuesday of next week, and little intermixed activity in between. And that's a really good sign.
Okay.
I mean, it elongates the ski season, which I think is great, but it's also for the runoff. The colder it lasts, the better we are, because you want a more efficient runoff later in the spring.
Okay. Is this another like little break in that high-pressure ridge? Is that high-pressure ridge still around?
Yeah. Like the weather today is going to be 70 degrees in Salt Lake. It's because that ridge reformed.
Wow.
And it's over us right now. But it's going to break down as this system comes through. And it should eventually just fall apart as we move into spring. But that's what we're seeing today. The ridge is back, but it's only transient. It's going to move out. And then we've got some pretty good storm activity really for the next week. And then we'll see what happens after that.
Wow, Brian. Did I just hear you predict weather 7 days ahead?
I can go 7 days,
but okay?
That's it.
All right.
Beyond that, it's guesswork.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean I'm not going to ask you later on.
Right, right.
That's what I always do. Hey, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Brian McInerney. He's a senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service down in Salt Lake City. He comes in every 3 months or so, and we talk about the previous season and on a local level. And we touched a little bit about the winter was like on a national level. Let's turn our attention to national, internationally. Like you say, out west here, we had probably a little drier and warmer than normal because of that massive high-pressure ridge that set up. But that also resulted in the East Coast experiencing probably one of the colder winters they've had in a decade or two, correct?
Yeah. What they've got is very cold temperatures all the way through up through January. And they're still in the cold right now. And it's just due to the way the pattern's set up, these highs and lows that are persistent over the certain parts of the globe. And when you look at Alaska, they were incredibly warm because that high pressure extended all the way north. And then the Arctic, again, was very warm during January. It was it was up to 10 degrees above normal.
Really?
Yeah, and that's something we'll see more of also as these weather patterns kind of become more intense. Our weather's going to become more intense, and all we really have to do is look back. Starting in June, we had, you know, last summer, we didn't have any precip at all. We were totally shut out. Then we went into July and August, and in September, and we had record flooding all the way across southern Utah and into Colorado. Then we went into the ridge through the end of January, and then we had monstrous storms that produced all sorts of snow and good stuff. And now we'll see what's going to shake out here. It seems like our weather is becoming one of more extreme events.
Let's talk. Is that... Is that what you're seeing that's unusual?
Yeah.
That these events are more extreme on the tail end of the bell curve,
yeah.
One side or the other?
If you look at the storms coming out of the Pacific Northwest, where we typically get our weather from during the winter, I mean, it can come from the southwest, west, or northwest. But storms coming out of the Pacific Northwest and up by Alaska, they're becoming less frequent but more intense. The storms we do get are bigger. They put down more weather, more winds, more snow, but we don't see them as often. And then if you look at storms coming out of the southwest, there really hasn't been any change in that. So when we look at cold storms, they're becoming less frequent, but they're more intense during that time. But we're also finding as a result of our warming temperatures that we're getting more rain, less snow than we used to in the past. It's still predominantly snow, but that's evolving as time goes on.
All right. I tell you what. Let's take a brief break for some underwriters. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about changing climate conditions. Got a question for you about inversions, too.
Okay.
So stay tuned. It's This Green Earth. We'll be back right after these words from our underwriters.
Hi. This is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage services and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Recycling in Summit County is improving. The trick to remember? Recyclable materials go in your larger blue or brown bin, and gray is for garbage. Recycling helps keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts from Park City Medical Center, a nonprofit community hospital and part of the Intermountain Healthcare System. Park City Medical Center is proud to be consistently recognized as having some of the most engaged employees in the country. Little wonder, considering we offer all employees a pension plan, 401k, excellent insurance, and of course, year-round employment. We are currently recruiting nurses, registrars, housekeepers, kitchen staff, and more. Visit ParkCityMedicalCenter.org to find your dream job.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, weekly talk show on environmental topics, issues, concerns, concepts of sustainability. With me is Brian McInerney. He is a senior hydrologist, right, Brian?
Yeah.
I always ask that. Yeah. Senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service down in Salt Lake City. We're talking all things weather and climate. I wanted to know about inversions. We know how they're caused. Is there any indication that we're seeing more inversions than normal? Like, you know, back in the 90s, a normal winter had two or three inversions, and now we're seeing five or six? Because really, air quality and poor air quality is a function of inversions. Any sense of things like that going on?
Well, you know, when you look at an active weather pattern, you have low pressures moving through, and you have the absence of inversions. Inversions are caused when the high pressure just has air descending, and it's like a bathtub. All the cold air is stuck in the bottom, and it doesn't mix out with the rest of the atmosphere. And they're typically associated with high pressure weather systems. Well, the past 3 years, our winters have been dominated by high pressure. And as a result, we have had the worst air quality in the entire country for prolonged periods of time in the Cache Valley, along the Ogden Valley, and the Wasatch Front. And these weather systems have set up for prolonged periods of time. Last year, we had it from January, February through March, and then April, we broke out of it. This year, we had it earlier, December and January, and the year before that, we also had that. So the idea is if you have more high-pressure events, you will have in these inversions, and we have more people down in the valley now, more
right.
cars, more driving, more pollutants
more
that are
sources.
Being tracked.
Right. But in this case, you know, the potential for more high pressure ridges, stagnant air to set up.
Yeah.
But that's really something I should ask of the air quality group if they're seeing tracking inversions.
Yeah. The state guys that do the air quality, they're the ones that would probably know this.
Okay. Well, let's go back. You mentioned that I think it was January. It was very warm up in the Arctic.
Yeah.
Here's some additional information about February. Arctic sea ice falls to fourth lowest February extent on record. This is from the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Arctic sea ice extent during February was the fourth lowest in the 36-year satellite record, so 36 years of record. Temperatures in the Arctic were 7 to 14 degrees above average for the month. Now, I mean, it's still cold. I mean, it's typically well below zero there. But to be 7 to 14 degrees above average, that's a pretty big
That's extent. Really big.
Yeah. Okay. Northern Hemisphere snow cover during February was the 17th largest. So, you know, conversely, because of that, the cold air kind of shifted down.
Yeah.
You had a greater snow cover.
And the jet stream followed all that cold air. So you had this dynamic weather pattern that produced all sorts of storminess, snow, cold, and a lot of inclement weather.
Okay. So let's spend a few more minutes talking about, well, the look ahead. What do you see? Anything dramatically shifting with this ridge and our dry above average temperatures here? Any changes coming up in the next 15 days or 30 days?
We should break out of this ridging pattern probably in another week. We probably won't see a big extended ridging pattern. And then beyond 7 days, we really can't forecast weather. It just doesn't work very well. But how they do it when they look 2 weeks out, a month out, 3 months out, is look at the equatorial Pacific and see if it's warmer than normal, which is an El Nino, or La Nina, which is cooler than normal. And right now we're neutral, but we are trending toward an El Nino. And the forecast is for a weak El Nino to set up sometime this summer. And then from there we'll see. Some of the biggest years we've ever had snow-wise came in a very large El Nino event. But Northern Utah doesn't have a really good signal for one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Southern Utah does better with strong El Ninos. But we're just kind of transitioning into a weak El Nino, which doesn't really tell us much. Also, since our atmosphere is changing, the idea that these occur X amount of years periodically, that's all kind of gone out the window, and they're trying to refigure how these things work. But when you have strong events, strong El Niños, strong La Niñas, there's a pretty good signature in parts of the country that you can put your finger on and say, when you have this down in the equator, you have this where we live. We don't see that right now. So essentially, we can see 5 to 7 days out, and that's it. I'd like to tell you,
well done.
That there's really good science out there, but there's not. They just can't quantify the atmosphere and model it beyond 5, possibly 7 days.
It's good science for 5 to 7 days.
Yeah, it works, and they're getting way better as time goes on. But beyond that time, it falls apart.
I look forward to the day you come here and says we have good science for 8 days. That'll be a great day.
That'd be fabulous.
Full week and a day.
And
so,
a day.
But so let's talk about. Reservoirs and water supply.
Yeah.
What are we looking like?
Well,
there?
We're at the tail end of our third year, and for most of the area, with the exception of the far northern part of Utah, and that we're going to have lower than normal runoff, and we have lower than normal reservoir stores. The storms in February helped our water supply out immensely, but we're going to see Jordanelle not fill this year, and we're going to see East Canyon is iffy. Pine View Reservoir may or may not. They're in that in-between depending on what happens with the spring weather. If we start drying out and we start seeing these temperatures of 70 degrees down at Salt Lake with bright sunshine, anticipate that Deer Creek may not fill, Jordanelle will not, East Canyon may not, Pine View may not, and most likely will not. But if we can extend this spring conditions in a very cold manner, have a lot of storms and rain a lot, then those iffy ones will probably fill. But we have very dry soils under our snowpack right now, and that's going to uptake.
Really?
Yeah, that's going to take up a lot of our melt off the bat. And And then when we start melting early, and it doesn't look like we're going to do that. We're going to go into April with these storms, which is really good. But when we have done that, you can lose up to 50% of the water in the snowpack to evaporation and transpiration or just sublimation if we get windy days. And it doesn't look like we're going to do that, at least for the next week. And we keep looking week to week to see how this shakes out. Cold and wet is better. Warm and dry is not so good.
Okay. So the reservoirs, what would make you what would make you feel comfortable? You wake up at what percentage of reservoirs would you like to see them full?
Well, if we had runoff at 120% of normal, of average, that would fill the reservoirs all the way around.
120%
runoff, except for Bear Lake and Lake Powell. What we're seeing is about 75% out of the Wasatch. The Upper Green, though, they're looking at 105%. And when you look at Lake Powell, they're about 118% expected inflow. So those areas, the Upper Green and the Colorado Basin, is doing quite well. The Wasatch and the Great Basin, we're not doing so well at all.
No.
And so when you have runoff volumes that are, you know, if you look at the Wasatch front, they're looking at 65% of average, 60% a little bit farther south, 25% down near St. George or less. These numbers, when you have dry soils, just won't fill these reservoirs.
And dry soils are really critical.
Mm-hmm.
Influencer component.
Yeah, because it's a three-part process. The fall months, you want rain as much as possible to saturate the soil so you have a wet sponge. And then the second part is the snow accumulation season, and we're just finishing that up here by about April 6th is statistically when the snowpack around here starts to get smaller. And then the third part is the spring weather, and this is a really big integral part of how this runoff process works. If you can generate that cold, wet spring, then you have a much more better relationship of runoff to your snowpack to runoff, almost a one-to-one relationship in very cold springs. If you have very dry conditions, you can have up to 50% gone into the atmosphere and have runoffs that are, you know, maybe 40% of what you expected when you got these warm temperatures.
Wow. Okay. So
we'll see.
Let's just stop there.
Yeah, right.
We'll see.
Good.
Brian McInerney, thanks so much again for stopping by and
giving
some insight. As always, very informative. And, of course, people can learn more about all things weather at the website.
Weather.gov.
That's your favorite?
Click on where you live, and you can get a little box right around the area around your house, a little polygon. For the weather forecast.
Right around your house. Just
right on your
micro weather
line.
Perfect. Hey, thanks again for joining us, Brian. We'll see you in June.
Yeah, we'll see you in June. Thanks.
At the solstice, right? That's
your
June solstice? All right, that's a deal.
Yeah, be a good day.
Let's take a break for an underwriter. When we come back, a little news item about Canadian oil. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Park City Restore is grateful for the many hands that have made it successful. Your gift of time means more affordable housing services are available locally through Habitat for Humanity. Plus, volunteering at the Restore gives you a first look at the amazing treasures donated for resale. Learn how you can get involved at habitat-utah.org. Click on the big yellow volunteer button. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Hi, I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. Join us for The Mountain Life Wednesdays at 9 a.m.
From the science of willpower to exploring the teenage brain.
From bike fit to relationship alignment.
From embracing imperfection to going gluten-free.
Join us for conversations with the experts on health, fitness, and lifestyle.
It's The Mountain Life Wednesdays at 9 a.m.
Brought to you by Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation.
Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa.
Park City Clinic.
Grand Valley Bank.
And Park Meadows Country Club.
Welcome back to This Green Earth weekly talk show on environmental issues. I'm Chris Cherniak. My co-host Nell Larson is away this week. She'll be back next week. I got a few minutes, and I wanted to cover this one item. Interesting information about where we get our oil in this country. it's because it's changing all the time. Not only are we producing more oil domestically, in fact, somewhere between 50 and 60% of our daily oil consumption comes from domestic sources these days, whether it's the Bakken or the Gulf or the Eagle Ford shale regions in Texas or California. So we're getting more and more oil domestically. But like I said in the intro, our biggest importer of oil these days is Canada. And the numbers I look, and this is according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, a great source of information about all things fossil fuel. Every day, we import 3.3 million barrels of oil from Canada, okay? And easily 90%, at least 90% of that is tar sands from Western Alberta, okay? So people ask, I thought we had XL pipeline. We're trying to fight the XL pipeline and trying to, you know, prevent Canadian tar sands from coming into the U.S. Well, that's one source. That's one pipeline. There's several other pipelines between Canada and the U.S. that are already sending in oil from there. And it comes in at the tune of 3.3 million barrels. And that's more oil than, like I said, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Venezuela, Iraq. Those are the next four big importers in this country combined. Okay. Saudi Arabia, we get 1.5 million barrels of oil a day. And from Mexico is our third biggest importer. That's 1 million barrels. Venezuela is 800,000, and that number is trending down, as is the number from Saudi Arabia. We used to get over 2 million barrels of oil a day from Saudi Arabia. That's trending down. Venezuela is trending down. We used to get a lot of oil from Nigeria, roughly 1 million barrels. That is down around 100,000 barrels a day. So we are reducing our reliance on foreign oil from those countries. But we're shifting our reliance to foreign oil from, in this case, from Canada. And that oil is the probably the dirtiest form of oil in tar sands. So, you know, these are the numbers that we should be more aware of. Where are we getting our oil from? And it's good that it's coming from Canada per se, but it's not good, environmentally speaking, that it's tar sands-based oil. So anyway, that's the a little information I wanted to share with people, because I know at times people will talk about, should we, for example, be shifting our transportation systems to natural gas, using compressed natural gas, or should we be using more high-efficiency gasoline or diesel-based vehicles? And you know, there's arguments from both sides with respect to natural gas and the fact that a lot of the natural gas that's being extracted from the ground leaks into the atmosphere, and that's methane, and it's a very aggressive greenhouse gas. But at the same time, roughly 15% of our oil, our daily oil consumption in this country, comes from Canadian tar sands, and that gets turned into diesel and gasoline. So we need to reduce our reliance on oil in general as best we can. So what do? Well, we could stop idling. Brian, are you going to stop idling now?
Absolutely.
Enough said. Thank you very much, Brian. Let's take one more break for some final underwriters, and we come back to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Hold on. Welcome back to This Green Earth. It's time to wrap up. Of course, say thanks to our underwriters for whom this show would not be possible. They include Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, Republic Services, Habitat for Humanity's Restore, Vail Resorts, Rocky Mountain Power, San Francisco Design, and Prudential Utah Real Estate. Of course, you can always give us your thoughts and ideas on our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth, or email us at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. Thanks again for joining us on This Green Earth. We'll be back next week. Same time, same station. This is KPCW 91.9 FM Park City. only in Park City, only on KPCW.